Welcome all. My name's Sam Foyle from Savills. I'll be chairing this session on the future of Oxford Street. Hopefully I'm well qualified for this, having acted for landlords and retailers on the street, including JD Sports, two flagship stores, Tesla, Circle, and previous Sony highs to Inglot, Toy Store, Longines, and recently into Missamy. So let's set the scene. Oxford Street has an annual footfall of over 164 million visitors a year, making it one of the busiest shopping streets in Europe. Westfield has 39 million, Westfield London. Crossrail, new West End company are forecasting 27.8% increase in sales in the West End to 11.3 billion by 2020 due to Crossrail and the larger catchment it will deliver. Oxford Street is to be the prime beneficiary of this due to proposed pedestrianisation and the fact it will have two Crossrail stations on the street. I'm going to introduce our panel for today. We have Anthony Selwyn here from Savills. Anthony leads the Central London retail team, specialising in high-profile Central London buildings, focusing particularly on Bond Street and Oxford Street, but not specialising in Oxford Street. Cam Lee. Cam advises clients from Hong Kong and China on commercial property investment and asset management. He is the UK representative of Hong Kong-based Circle Property Limited and LC Real Estate Group, which have a combined property portfolio of over 450 million in Oxford Street and Bond Street. He also acts as a personal advisor for high net worth individuals, property investment companies from Hong Kong. We also have Councillor Robert Davis here. Councillor Davis has served as a councillor on Westminster City Council since 1982 and is currently the longest serving member of the council. He was awarded an MBE in the Queen's Birthday Honours in June 2015 for his services to local government and planning. And then we have Craig McWilliam here at the end, the Chief Executive of Grosvenor Britain and Ireland. Craig was appointed to Grosvenor Britain and Ireland Board in 2010. In 2013, he became the Executive Director responsible for the London Estate, having previously had charge of all development activities of the London Estate. In January 2017, Craig became CEO of Grosvenor Britain and Ireland. So, I thought it was a good starting point to go back to look forward. So we've looked at Oxford Street in 1968, 1993, and today, to look at obvious changes and trends. So I've got a few facts for you to set us off. Oxford Street has gone from 285 stores in 1992 to 228 today. That's if you exclude Crossrail development. It's a net loss of 50 stores. In 1968, there was 2% combined men's and women's fashion stores. Now there's 20%. There were 10% men's only stores in 1993. Now there's only 1%. Retailer mix has become more international the last 25 years. There was little change between 1968 and 1993. Today, 67% of Oxford Street is occupied by UK retailers. Back in 1993, it was 94%. The biggest driver is European retailers, which is expected, up from 4% to 21% since 1993. The most common fascia in 1968, Anthony probably knows this one, but was Dulces with 7. 1993, anyone? Is David Kenningham here? Sock Shop, 6. And today, Boots with 5. Who's still on the street? 6.5% of fascias from 1968 are still present, and 19% from 1993 are still present. This shows the churn, which has to be positive. This leads to diversity, which I'm going to come on to and talk to Anthony about in a moment. Today, there are 142 fascias. Back in 1968, there were 199 fascias, albeit there were many more independents. So I'm going to come and sit down and talk to Anthony. So, Anthony.
This isn't staged at all, by the way.
Firstly, are those shoes from Dulces? Is there enough diversity, would you feel, on the street? And with that, Why less fascias and fewer stores?
So I've been dealing with Oxford Street for a little bit over 25 years. So I do remember a lot of the brands who were there in the late 80s and 90s. And it would take an awful long time to actually talk through all the changes and what we really look at being the future of Oxford Street without talking about what's happened in the past. There's been terrific rental growth all across the West End in the last 5-10 years, which one of the most dramatic changes has been international investment. Oxford Street has been a large beneficiary of that. What we're trying to talk about today is how Oxford Street emerges out of this terrific growth, how we see Oxford Street potentially becoming much more interesting again, some of the competitors and challenges ahead. So sort of carrying on from Sam's theme, you know, whenever we give advice to clients, landlord clients principally on Oxford Street, we tend to talk about what's happened before. And I see Oxford Street, the key structural changes over a 5 and maybe 15, 20-year time period has been key. So over the last 5 years, the biggest changes has been on the ownership, which, as we say, has changed dramatically. There's been a terrific amount of international money that's landed in London in the two prime core streets being Oxford Street and Regent Street, sorry, Oxford Street and Bond Street, where investors can buy. Obviously, in some of the other locations, they're dominated by the big estates. Cam's going to talk about the particular Hong Kong investment group. But that's very important, understanding the ownership, because, you know, years ago, most of us were just dealing with the funds and institutions, and it was much more straightforward in understanding what their goals were in terms of building and letting buildings and then their exit strategy. What none of us really can understand is what the real strategy is for these international investors, whether it's short, medium or long term. And part of that might be dictated by growth in rental values. The second part, or the most significant changes in the last 5 years, has been development on the eastern end of Oxford Street, which is absolutely aligned with Crossrail. So there have been several developers, you know, obviously including Great Portland Estates and Derwent, who are either completing or partway through really important developments which will serve Oxford Street East very well over the next 10 to 20 years. We all knew they were coming. It's really, you know, which retailers are going to be attracted to the eastern end of Oxford Street in comparison to the west. And west, obviously, is dominated by the department stores. If you look back over a longer period, say 15 to 20 years, I think you really need to understand, you know, it's more about how retailing has changed. So as Sam gave with some of the figures, you know, 20, 30 years ago on Oxford Street, you had a lot of independents. You know, arguably, the market was more focused on independents rather than the large groups. That's been a big change, part because the big groups, big retailers like Gap in the 90s, Inditex and H&M following on, demanded larger stores because they wanted to have multi-faceted units where they'd have men's, ladies, kids' wear, home wear. So that created the development opportunity for owners and pushed out some of the more independent uses along the way. You could argue, and when hopefully people ask some questions afterwards, you could argue that rents perhaps have forced some of the independents out. To a certain extent, that happens on every street. You know, some of the older uses go. I think there's pressures from other locations that have got very good. And also, you know, what Oxford Street really needs is to make sure that any new entrants coming to London, you know, see Oxford Street as a priority. The more interesting statistic, I think, is talking about the fascias, where there's a 20% reduction in terms of fascias compared with 20 years ago. And that really perhaps suggests if that keeps on growing, you know, Oxford Street could well become less interesting, which I think is a common theme to what a lot of other people have been saying in some of the other debates. You know, in terms of what the offer is to particularly the tourist spend, they're going to be encouraged by, you know, an overall offer. No one is ever going to be able to compete in terms of a street with Oxford Street on footfall, but it's important that that becomes, you know, diversified in answer to Sam's question. However, the likes of Shaftesbury and the Crown have been able to maintain very good growth on their estates over the last 5 years, and that's focusing very much on independent brands or brands who aren't going to have lots and lots of shops. So people understand that those areas are different to shopping. So my final sort of initial comment is I think going forwards, you know, Oxford Street is all about how do you maintain the right growth to attract investment in the location, and how do you get retailers, particularly the new entrants, to want to take Oxford Street up first. I think we need to create more stores, which is moving on towards more fascias again. I think that's a key part of, you know, the future of Oxford Street.
In terms of when you highlight more stores on Oxford Street, in terms of the bigger brands, so the H&Ms and the Zaras of this world, and we're talking about them having less fascias, do you see them taking less stores but bigger stores?
Yeah, I think that when I started an awful long time ago, a lot of the brands, perhaps, you know, over the years they developed, and when the likes of Inditex started really dominating the market, they might have 6, 7, 8 stores on the street. I think everyone's accepted that the various cost implications of rent and rates has to have some kind of effect, which naturally would suggest that these brands will have fewer stores but perhaps more important ones. Someone may throw a statistic at us saying that there's lots of shops available on the street. I would suggest that perhaps less than 5% of those shops or those tenants want to leave Oxford Street completely.
Yeah.
And that's the positive message. So what we really need to do is replace the likes of H&M with some of the new brands coming over from the US or Asia or within other parts of Europe.
Okay. On to Asia. Cam, what is attracting the Asian investors to Oxford Street?
Well, I think everybody knows that, like Anthony said, Oxford would attract a lot of international brands. And the main point is the international brand keep coming in and evolving into a very attractive shopping district in the UK, in London. And also, you know, overseas investor perspective, we are looking at Oxford Street as a kind of very secure investment environment. It offers unparalleled secure income for the overseas investor. And also, the professionalism, the management, and the people like Anthony and everybody there offer the overseas investor the kind of confidence that they can trust, they can invest, and they can safely understand that their investment will be managed by proper professionals. And also, I think as far as Hong Kong is concerned, in fact, it's concerned, everybody knows that Hong Kong used to be called a shopper's paradise. So the Hong Kong investor quite understand how to make a shopping district attractive to the investor, to their shopper. And the attraction in particular with regard to the UK investment is in Hong Kong, all the leases are only granted on the basis of 2 or 3 years. Now, this it could be an advantage, but also it will affect, you know, the long-term investment because of the shortness of the lease. So the rent can go up and down very quickly. Whereas in UK, the lease they are talking about 10, 15, 20-year lease. So you are in the same knowledge that your investment and your income will be secure for the longer term. And also, if you look over in the last couple of decades, the rental income in Oxford Street is always going upward. So this will guarantee the overseas investor a kind of they can work out their long-term investment return. And these are the attraction of the Oxford Street. And also now, I think every people know that because of the car rail coming in, and the new West End company are now putting in a lot of improvement on the public ramp, and that would help a lot of overseas tourists and shoppers coming in. So these are the reason why the overseas investor and the Hong Kong investor find opportunity very attractive.
Do you think we've got the right conditions for this to continue happening?
Yeah.
Are your clients wanting to continue to invest?
I think so, because, you know, we can see the opportunity keep evolving, keep improving. And these are the main factors that will attract overseas investors coming to invest in Oxfordshire. And also, by and large, the people can see that all the developers, the big investors here in Oxfordshire, and their development approach are always very coherent. They have, working on the same principle to improve the appearance of Oxfordshire and to enhance the shopper's experience.
Thanks, Cam. Robert, if we can come over to you now. What's Westminster City Council doing to facilitate growth and change on Oxford Street in terms of planning policy and strategy?
Well, Oxford Street is, I think, one of the great, if not the greatest, retail streets in the world. It has amazing footfall, and with Crossrail coming along, it's going to get even more dense. And that's why we are taking a lead, working in partnership not only with the New West End Company and with the Mayor of London and other stakeholders in really turning it around. And that's why we, and I chair the Oxford Street Strategy Board, which is looking at how we can improve it. We cannot do nothing. It is really a disgrace in the terms of the public realm at the moment, and we are going to look at all the options as we're consulting on at the moment to really invest in that street, to give pedestrians priority and to make it workable, but to also recognise it's part of a larger area, and you cannot look at Oxford Street in isolation. You have to take into account the neighbouring residential and commercial areas and look at it holistically. And we have lots of plans, and we will consult on those plans to improve the area. And we are already, in some of the surrounding streets, investing in the public realm, such as Bond Street. If you just look outside Louis Vuitton at the moment, where we've finished the first stage, first bits of the refurbishment. And by the way, Cam, it's Westminster Council that does the public realm, not New WEC. They support us, but it's Westminster Council that actually does the public realm. And we are really investing in the area. Baker Street becoming two-way with Gloucester Place. We're doing Hanover Square, and it is going to be amazing. And there's the short term, and there's the long term, and there's the East and the West Ends. And we have changed our policies over time. When I was responsible for planning policy, we were very conscious the East End of Oxford Street was declining, and we started to relax our planning policies. And we worked with developers, and the ones you listed, some developers at East End, you didn't mention Duclis, who did that fabulous development at the corner of Soho Square. And you've got some wonderful new developments there. That will all improve. We've got our wonderful new theatre coming to 1 Oxford Street and that is going to change and be a game changer at the East End, make it a cultural quarter. In the other side, that place called Camden is going to have this fantastic new music venue next to Centre Point. And so the area is changing. People want to dwell and be in Oxford Street. And we have to look also at balancing retail and getting the retail and supporting retail, supporting the supporters of retail, i.e. restaurants, cafes, and make sure places like St James Street equally support the retail as well. And so we're also looking at ways of growing the area. So, yes, we're consulting as well on growth, and what that means is a bigger building, so maybe a floor or two floors to allow that growth and that extra office space, retail space and residential space to grow into, and supporting and encouraging retailers to come here. And I would love, and I've been fighting for years and failed, to get another department store into Oxford Street or into the West End. I think the one thing the West End is unique the unique offer it has is the number of department stores we have. And that's one thing that is lacking. And I would love to encourage one of the great American department stores to come into the West End. And that's what you need to do to attract. And already Selfridges is changing. Selfridges now becomes the destination. And that's what's exciting about someone like Selfridges. It's that whole holistic package that involves better public realm, a nicer environment, but also at the council supporting retail and supporting development.
Thank you. Craig, some of the most successful locations in London are managed estates. Oxford Street's very diverse in terms of its ownership. How can it compete?
I mean, we're fortunate in owning an estate just south of Oxford Street. And I suppose as a business, what we're very conscious of is the enormous pressure that London's growth and success puts on the West End, on the infrastructure, on the communities, on the people. And we see it as necessary to help our estate evolve to work harder for London, for the West End, to accommodate more jobs, more homes, and fundamentally better places for everybody. So actually, I feel Oxford Street has to do the same thing. I mean, in that context, I think there are two principal risks for Oxford Street and its continued success. Firstly, without change, Oxford Street's competitive advantages will erode. You know, its ability to attract visitors in the face of congestion and traffic and air pollution will decline. And secondly, the districts in the West End face a shortfall of employment space. Their ability to continue to provide places for jobs to accommodate the growth of London. And without intervention, that's going to weaken London's competitiveness and the attractiveness of the West End. So the solution, of course, is that actually Oxford Street needs to be repositioned as a district rather than a street. Oxford Street and its neighbouring areas have to be considered as one. Each of them complements and drives each other's success. So Mayfair supports Oxford Street. Oxford Street supports Marylebone. What we see is there's a great opportunity for additional employment. We believe that you could accommodate 15,000 extra jobs just in West Oxford Street and a similar or greater number around East Oxford Street by looking at it at a district-led approach. And what we need is a strong vision for these places from our public sector partners, from Westminster, the things that Robert's just been talking about, that allows both the public and the private to come together to invest around this vision for a revitalised district. But of course, we need a new approach to policy and a new approach to funding. And what we feel is that you can assess the potential of each of these unique West End districts to understand how much growth they can accommodate, the kind of place that they can become, the number of homes they can accommodate, and how they need to be managed, and then hopefully put together a funding plan so that London can see more devolution to its government, so that the benefits of growth can be reinvested locally, so that people who live and work in the West End see a dividend from the growth that we're all experiencing. So in the end, I think that the solution for Oxford Street, which has fractured ownership, is for Westminster and the GLA to promote a growth for vision for a district, which the private sector can then work with them to deliver, hopefully aligned with a steady stream of funding from the public sector that the private sector can co-invest alongside to unlock the growth opportunities that Oxford Street offers.
Great, thank you. In terms of now coming to the panel as a whole here with a few questions, what we're really here today for is to talk about how Oxford Street can get better. Physically, we're seeing all the improvements coming through in terms of Crossrail, pedestrianisation. We've all been to many seminars and discussions about that, so I didn't want to get too focused on that in this first element of it. But there are areas that we can see and we need to see improvements, and I've spoken to many agents and stakeholders on Oxford Street, and the theme that's come up so many times, one is the huts. The operators on these corners that we know have been there forever and a day, But they're having an impact now in terms of retailers taking space. And there are many examples that I'm aware of and from other agents and landlords I've spoken to where retailers have stepped away from a property because of the impact of them, with a souvenir operator literally on the front of their store. The council, do we see... Is there going to be a route through this? Because...
Market traders.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, yeah, we are looking, and part of the proposals is to work with them and possibly find a better way of them operating. Now, we have to be careful because they have certain legal rights that make it very difficult to just move them. You can't just move someone or get rid of them because they're entrenched in law, their rights. So you have to work with the traders, and we are working with the traders, and we're using Crossrail and the changes that are coming forward to find a way that we can allow them to trade without doing the damage to the other stores and the damage to the environment that some people would argue they're doing now. So the answer is we're on the project. We have to work with them, take them with us, but that is something we think we can achieve.
Do we have a timescale? Do we feel?
Well, it's all part and parcel of all the timetable for the long-term future of Oxford Street. There's going to be a short-term project to get something changed and something different and something better by the 4th of December 2018, the day the Elizabeth line opens. But a lot of this is going to take a little longer, and therefore there's a longer programme where we can actually have time and get it right and do it much more permanently. And it's going to cost a lot of money. But we are going to try and achieve something that is going to be game-changing, and it's all part of that package.
So we'd expect within the next two years?
Yeah, hopefully within 2 to 3 years you will see, certainly within 5 years, you will go to Oxford Street and be unrecognisable.
Fantastic. I think everyone will be very pleased to hear that.
As soon as the Crossrail is coming into operation, you know, very soon, and that will increase the footfall hugely. The market store will cause some kind of congestion, and on the footfall.
Well, that's why we're looking at a short-term ground project to address that
more quickly.
Yeah,
sorting out the problem.
I agree 100%. But sadly, they have the legal rights on their side. I cannot just move them tomorrow. They will be rushing off to the courts and magistrates, who will then see some young man who has 5 children and 3 mother-in-laws to look after and will give them their licence and allow them to stay there. So you have to work with them and get them to a stage when we can allow them to operate, but in a way that actually fits in with our future plans for Oxford Street.
Okay.
Yeah, it's all part of the package, yes. If we can find a better place for them, then yes. But we need to work with them to find somewhere that they feel they can trade comfortably and wants to be equally successful as a trader, but somewhere that is in a position that is more in tune to our vision for a better Oxford Street.
Thank you. The other area that we've been seeing, and from walking the street with a number of retailers over the last few months, we're seeing a large number of souvenir and temporary discount operators in the properties. Now, I can understand that, and I've got clients that have been involved in that as well, where there's a development taking place or there's a short-term requirement needed, and the level of rent that these operators are willing to pay is very, very high. But when we look at the managed estates, Craig, I'm going to come to you on this, we don't see this, and there's a lot of pop-up branded retailers that we see the managed estate using, which has a much better knock-on effect for your retailing in the longer term than Oxford Street at the moment. It's especially West Oxford Street, where we've seen a number pop up over the course of the last 6 months. Mm. How do you do this, and how has this developed?
I mean, we obviously have the benefit that we own multiple assets in the same place, so we are very conscious that the impact of what one letting has on all of the others. So if we have a vacant unit, if we have a site that's not ready for development, then we're going to work really hard to make sure we do something that's actually, whilst it's temporary, it's also really great. Because it's still in the middle of the parade, it's still next to other people, it's still next to our offices and to our flats. The issue we have on Oxford Street is, you know, you'll have somebody who has only one asset. And actually, I think that here there's a great role for somebody like the new SN company to try and make owners realise that for the long-term health of the street, they need to ensure that the offer remains great all the time. even in the run-up to a development, because they put tat shops in there for 6 months, 12 months. Well, there will be some shoppers who never come to the street again. And then they finish their, you know, great development, but they've already, you know, they've made that small cut to the health of Oxford Street. And, you know, it becomes death by a thousand cuts. So I'm back to this point that there has to be a compelling vision for Oxford Street. It has to be a district. You know, streets don't retail as linear streets going nowhere. Retail is something that's got to be enjoyed as an area that you can walk through with a mix of uses, of culture and of open spaces. We've almost got that, of course. And actually, it just requires us to reimagine Oxford Street as a different place. And I think things like those temporary uses being used more creatively should be seen as a challenge within the context of that vision, which is, of course, is a document that we're going to be launching immediately after this panel session this afternoon. So hence the heavy hint that if you are able to attend, please do come and hear all about that.
And then another question to you, Robert, just on the planning policy side of things. I know that a number of retailers have been looking and trying to bring digital signage much more onto their stores in keeping with a number of the other global cities that have been starting to approve this much more. Do you see a change in policy potentially coming through on Oxford Street for this?
We've been trying to prevent all shop windows becoming a digital advertisement. The last thing we want to do is people walking down Oxford Street and every single window is just a digital advert with no goods in at all. That doesn't do anything for the vibrancy of a retail street. And as soon as you allow one, you allow them all. And, you know, there are, as I'm sure some of you know, loopholes in the law, which allows it occasionally. And you just have to look. And I'm afraid, although I'm a great fan of the Crown Estate, I'm not happy with that. I can't even remember the name of the American retailer down Regent Street, but all you see is the beach in California. That is not exciting enough for someone to walk down. You know, you get people to walk down the street and to get them to come out off their sofa and buying digitally, to come into a shop when it's exciting to walk down the street and see really interesting shop windows. And so, yes, we are difficult. We have to be realistic that that's the way things are moving, but we have to try and plan it in a way that still allows the retail street to be exciting to walk down and not just walk down a series of digital adverts and therefore puts you off coming back again.
OK. Anthony, I was going to ask you in terms of potential future requirements and where we could see those coming from. We had the big surge of the American retailers, the European retailers. Where else do you see these brands coming from?
I think that there's definitely more US brands to come to London. Some have gone into the likes of Westfield over the last few years, like American Eagle. I think from a cost perspective, we've got Under Armour, who obviously are looking at London very seriously at the moment. Others like Express is quite a big chain internationally. Again, they've been flirting with Oxford Street and looked at Regent Street as well. I think a lot of the international retailers, you know, also recognise the change that's been going on in London over the last 5 years. And yeah, the big question for them is, you know, if they're going to invest in London, they're probably going to invest in the rest of Europe as well. So it's not just about opening a couple of stores in the West End. So it's part of a much bigger expansion. And I think, you know, the whole Crossrail, the whole physical changes, which hasn't happened in the last 15, 20 years, is a big key time in our market, which is the best opportunity we've got of actually attracting these new entrants to make that commitment. Going back to just covering one of the other points before, I think, you know, other than the physical change, which I think is very much the responsibility or the opportunity from Westminster, you know, Oxford Street is very similar in a way to Bond Street, being multi-owned. So you haven't got the luxury, excuse the pun, of one estate dictating the whole location and having a very different investment criteria attached to it. So you're reliant on somehow making Oxford Street more acceptable in terms of being a pleasant place to shop. I think the department stores, whilst I think it's a great idea, particularly the eastern end of Oxford Street is crying out for a department store. Again, that goes back to, from an investment profile, a single owner of a very large building, and it would need to be between 100,000 and 200,000 square feet as a minimum. The rental benefit of doing a deal with a department store is often very different to being able to do a deal with multi-group of tenants. And unless you're suddenly going to get more investors, which may happen, on Oxford Street, clubbing together, perhaps producing some major funds to having better control, you're not necessarily going to get away from that position. The Crown have an opportunity potentially, I don't know if anyone's here from the Crown, something like at Oxford Circus, where arguably they would have reason to perhaps have a positioning of a big anchor store there that doesn't necessarily have to work in an individual basis from an investment point of view, but has a big knock-on effect to Regent Street. That's the only obvious example I can think of where someone could have, as Craig said, a bit of placemaking in conjunction with their overall sort of fund activity.
You had the opportunity because there was Dickens and Jones. It was empty, and I tried to stop it being broken up, and I failed because there was no department store would go in there. And yet, why aren't Bloomingdale's and the Saks of Fifth Avenue, why aren't they operating in central London? Because they're going to be placemakers if you could attract them there. And you have the sites, we just lose them. You know, Liberty's came to see me years ago to say they wanted to close down, turn into a hotel, and I said no. And look, it's operating successfully now. You can have successful department stores that become anchors, that people come to the West End because there are this collection of great department stores that are unique.
But at the same time, those department stores, as it was said in another debate earlier, I can't remember who mentioned it, they, just by the power that they have in terms of discounts on products, puts pressure on the retailers who may actually want to be on Oxford Street. An Oxford Street tenant may think, well, I'll just go into Selfridges, for example, and de-risk my position because I know that I've got a captive audience there and I'm not tied into a long lease and I'm doing a turnover deal, rather than taking a commitment on Oxford Street. So I think it's also a shared responsibility of the bigger department stores to think, how can we loosen up some of the arrangements to make sure that the area outside the department stores keeps growing?
That actually links in nicely. I was going to ask Tim Reid, I think he's here from Selfridges today. Tim, whereabouts are you? Can we get a mic over to Tim? Tim, I was going to ask you just in terms of the development plans, which are obviously huge with Selfridges at the moment, refurbishment, etc., and how that links in with the wider aspirations for the pedestrianisation of Oxford Street. And then also, do you feel Selfridges could in some ways be too dominant on Oxford Street?
Well, I'll deal with the first bit first. I think we hope that our development plans will be a key element in enhancing Oxford Street as a global retail destination. I think some of the points that Craig was making earlier on, the centrepiece of it is a new, major new entrance on Duke Street, coupled with public realm enhancements. And we hope that that will encourage people to explore the side streets in an environment that sort of favours the pedestrian rather than cars. So I hope that's going to be a big contribution. Then the second point, are we too dominant? No. We don't think so. I think we prefer to think of ourselves as an anchor for the west end of the street, and the significant sums that we're investing, are doing our bit to attract visitors to the street. And in some ways, I think maybe the work that we've done has changed the perceptions of the street in a small way, so that brands maybe that wouldn't have looked at Oxford Street in the past are now starting to do so.
Thank you, Tim. So I was going to, knowing that there's quite a lot of people here wanting to ask questions today, I thought 5 minutes probably wouldn't be long enough. So I'm hoping we've given ourselves a bit more time than that. So are there any questions there from the audience? Just back here.
Hi there. My name's Chris Shaw, Shaw Corporation. I'm a business and a resident in just behind Oxford Street, and was heartened to hear both Robert and Craig talk about not only the retail, which this discussion has predominated about, but the whole neighbourhood and the fact that Oxford Street runs through the centre of London with residents and businesses on either side, and that the regeneration of Oxford Street, which is a very, very necessary issue and something that should have been done you know, a long time ago, that the process of that is just not to make Oxford Street the star of the show, but the areas on either side and the places where even visitors go in terms of restaurants and residences, that they're also upgraded at the same time, that all of the traffic that's on Oxford Street by pedestrianisation isn't just shoved onto the side streets, and that the key issues such as quality and air quality are taken on board at the same time as the regeneration aspects. And I just wondered if I direct that to Robert and to Craig, what their response to that would be, because I know it's very much in their minds.
Can I just come in and say, the mayor had a manifesto commitment that as soon as he came off into office, he was going to totally pedestrianise Oxford Street by Christmas. No thoughts to north-south the crossings, no thought to where all the traffic and the deliveries were going to go. We've persuaded the mayor that we are responsible local authority, that we can work with the mayor and with the residents and the businesses and the bids to actually make Oxford Street fantastic, but not forgetting it is a wider area we need to address. And that's why we're working closely with all the stakeholders, and particularly including the residents, who we're going to take with us, and we're not going to dump all the traffic on their streets. We're going to make the whole area a much better area. And it is that which I think is key to a successful Oxford Street, because it's equally important to have a successful Marylebone High Street, a successful Wigmore Street, a successful Mound Street. And that's why, and also have residents that are happy and want to live in that area. And that's why we have to work and work and do it properly. And that's what the leadership Westminster Council wants to give.
Yeah, the only thing I would add to that is it's been fantastic that the mayor gave that impetus, but it absolutely isn't enough, as Robert says. You know, Oxford Street being kind of repaved so that it's a large area with no traffic on it won't make it a success. Making it a success means actually allowing it to join back up with all of the streets and areas around it so that they each support each other. And we touched on the green huts. You know, there is basically a wall of green huts and public toilets that stops you getting off Oxford Street, north and south. Transforming that requires us to just have a different expectation from the West End to become this really great district rather than a linear street.
OK. Any other questions? Jace?
Thank you. Jace Tyrrell, New West End Company. Great to see so many members here, actually, in the audience. Please come along after as well, because a lot of the points that have been made by the panellists are in the study, which is 2 years' worth of work that a lot of you have fed into, which picks up all the points around this district, and it's not just a traffic-led solution. But to carry on with Robert's point, you know, we've looked at the traffic proposals that the Mayor and TfL and Westminster are bringing forward, and on your behalf, we're very clear this has to be about reducing traffic in the area and actually opening up these north-south routes, creating these other oases areas, and actually thinking about the wider mix. And you're right, we have some very important neighbours right on our doorstep, and they're very important customers to the West End. So if you haven't responded to the consultation, please do so. It closes on Sunday, and all the details of how we've responded on your behalf are available. Short plug. Thank you.
Was that a question, Jace?
What was the question? I think you answered the question. Thank you, Jace.
Can I,
when will
there is a question, actually, yes, after my statement. To Councillor Davis, the management of Oxford Street and actually the West End, you know, we talk about Crossrail arriving next December. We could have 20, 30 million more customers here. What is the Council and TfL doing to think about the management of our streets, particularly enforcement and also these new public spaces we're opening up and how we can better resource this?
Crucial that we look not only at how to change the street, but how to manage it once we've changed it, as well as managing it in the interim. Because what we don't want to happen is that when you have a beautiful Oxford Street with almost no traffic movement, that it then becomes very much like the north terrace of Trafalgar Square, full of Romanian statues and people selling, as you remember, one of my youth going down Oxford Street, selling fake perfumes. That's the last thing we want. And so management is absolutely crucial. And we mustn't forget that just to make it nicer could actually attract the wrong type of people and the wrong type of day. So in the wrong type of day. So you don't want nighttime entertainment, for example. You've already got it at certain parts of Westminster. And I'm discovering now that City Hall has moved to Trafalgar Square. These loud noises and musicians playing so loudly in Trafalgar Square all day long. I mean, that's the last thing we want to do is put that into Oxford Street. So, yes, management is going to be crucial, and working with our partners, and in particular, I'll give another plug for Newark, with you, Jace, making sure that together we make sure it's a very nice environment when we've got it right.
Any other questions? No other questions at all? I've got one more question. Oh, here we go.
Hi, Tim Stranack from Community Fibre. Just wanted to get the panel's view on how Oxford Street needs to adapt to the growing or the growth of online retail and what it needs to do to position itself in the new world.
Anthony?
I'll kick off. My speciality. I think it's too early to fully understand what the impact of online retailing is going to be sort of over the next 5-10 years, which is really what we would all like to know. And I think part of that is because retailers have been quite slow to create the right platforms to actually know what percentage of their business the online business provides. We've talked about experience going into stores, which I think is key, and I don't necessarily disagree with Robert's comment on fascias and how expressive retailers are in creating their environment to attract people. I think to a certain extent you have to leave that to the retailer because that's their business. But I think certainly, and Crown Estate are probably further ahead than anyone else in terms of having a proper synergy between what happens in their stores and what works online, so the customer can't do one without the other, so to speak. And that, again, is the advantage of the estate positioning. But I think it'll take some time before we understand the impact. It will certainly mean retailers will open fewer stores in central London than they have done historically.
But finishing on a positive with that, we're seeing a number of the internet brands now coming physical. And I mean, I've been in discussion, I'm sure many others have, on specific stores on Oxford Street with a number of them on the fashion side. So I think we're going to see that coming through more and more in terms of new brands being the internet fashion retailers coming through.
Can I just add, what you're also going to do, and this is what people like Newark and the Heart of London have to do with Westminster Council and others, is remind people time and time again that it is not just the retail you come to Oxford Street for. You come for that whole experience of shopping, having something to eat, then going to the cinema, see a film that's only just been released, the theatre, the clubs, the bars, the museums. It's the whole package that makes Westminster unique and special. And that's what West End Live, which is happening next weekend, was all about, to remind people that whole West End is more than just retail, more than just the restaurants. It's that the unique thing that only the West End offers, which is that whole package which nowhere in the world, possibly except in Broadway, can offer.
Great. Any final question? I think we've got time for one more, if there's one there. If not, I was going to just throw some. Is Richard Leslie here? He is, isn't he? Richard? Where is he? No, he's gone. I was going to ask a developer a question, but don't worry. I think that's it. Thank you to the panel for your time. Thank you, everybody.